Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it's the end of a very long and very eventful political week, and it's not over yet, of course, because the South Carolina primary, which holds a whole lot of ramifications, is Saturday. But let's start with the good news, and the good news that hopefully 1 year from today, January 20th, we will be swearing in a new president of the United States. Hopefully we've now endured successfully three quarters of what will be the Obama presidency, and Lord willing, not just his first term. But in addition to that, you know, people talk about how Mitt Romney is worth a couple hundred million dollars, so he's clearly out of touch. He's not identifying well with the struggles of the nation right now. Well, let's look at the president and how this might work well for the Republican nominee, whether it's Romney or anybody else later this year. The president staring at, I believe, the worst housing starts on record recently. The unemployment rate still stinks. He just killed the Keystone Pipeline. And so here's what the president was spending his day doing, given all those major economic challenges. So that was at a fundraiser. That was after he visited with Mickey, Minnie, and Goofy at Disney World to pitch more of a jobs program, which so many conservative bloggers enjoyed pointing out was the appropriate place for Obama to pitch his latest fictional jobs plan. But, Jim, if people get a real good grasp of how this president is responding to very real challenges, you got to like our chances, even though it's not easy to beat an incumbent.
Absolutely correct, Greg. I'm just going to observe, what better a metaphor could you get than for Obama to hold a photo op, they have to shut down Main Street USA. We will talk a bit in the next couple of martinis about the demolition derby that the Republican debate has turned into. Lots of reasons to be frustrated or angered by what we're, you know, what we're seeing in the debates. But I don't know about you, Greg. I'm not getting a great sense of urgency from this administration. I mean, you know, that you put out the litany of bad economic news. Gas prices have been up for the past 4 weeks. I paid $3.50 a gallon, earlier this week, and it's January. Traditionally, this is one of the months where there's, you know, much lower demand for gas and prices dip a bit. We'll probably have it in the neighborhood of $4.50 come summer next year. And, you know, this is not a good economy. And the Obamas, you know, Obama's visiting Disneyland and then doing a fundraiser at the Apollo Theater and singing. And, you know, at that point, you might as well go to a forest fire and break out the fiddle, because it just kind of reinforces this image of a president who's out of touch and kind of enjoying himself through his presidency and you know, denouncing the rich while holding these high-dollar fundraisers and just fundamentally out of touch. There's this contradiction between what the Obama, you know, administration promised as a candidate in 2008 and what they've delivered. And their attitude is just kind of to ignore it and just kind of pretend it. They issued this ad earlier this week that basically tries to argue that promises have been kept and just look around yourself. You know, if Obama had kept his promises, I think his approval rating would be way higher than it is. So by no means we should, you know, think this is an easy task to unseat an incumbent president. But this is a president who kind of need to, one, doesn't act like he's in trouble, which I think means the Obama administration may find themselves kind of a bit complacent as they approach this reelection campaign, and two, without any record to run on, which is really a tough spot for an incumbent. We will see what happens, but I think this, you know, in the coming year, we will see the judgment rendered on Obama. It's really hard to see the American people really loving what they've been getting for the past 3 years.
Yeah, I don't think they love it. The only way he stays is if he successfully cons them into believing that the Republican alternative is unacceptable. And I believe Obama's urgency will be directly proportional to what he considers the risk to his job security. And it's a little too far away from that right now for him to be overly concerned, which if he wants to stay that way, that's fine with me, because that'll help the Republican nominee. Speaking of which, there's four people left in the running for that: Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum and Ron Paul. And a number of different moments from that debate to talk about here. First, with the bad martini, Mitt Romney, I think most people would agree, had a better performance than he did Monday night, but there were still a couple of moments, Jim, that just kind of made us cringe. You talked about one of them in the Morning Jolt today, and that's when I think it was Rick Santorum going after him on either Romney Care or his record on abortion, and he looked personally wounded and hurt that someone would question his character. And welcome to politics. And then the second was John King explaining that this whole releasing your taxes question really goes back to Mitt Romney's dad, George Romney, when he was briefly running for president in 1967 and 68 and released a lot of years' worth of tax returns. So here's how that exchange went.
When you release yours, Will you follow your father's example?
Maybe. I don't know how many years I'll release. I'll take a look at what our documents are. And I'll release multiple years. I don't know how many years, but I'll be happy to do that.
Now, after that massive stumble and the huge reaction from the crowd, he finally got into, I think, a better answer that'll resonate better later in the campaign for him, that he's not going to apologize for his success, and that he did not just inherit this money. He went out and earned it separate from what his father was able to achieve. And so eventually he might get this answer right, but it looked pretty choppy on both of those fronts last night.
Sometimes you get the feeling nobody really wants to win this nomination because everybody has their time in the sun, and then they inevitably implode. And while I don't think you can quite say that Romney is imploding over this, he has not closed strong in South Carolina. Very frustrating that like when he says, Well, first of all, Governor, decide. He speaks about this like he has to ask permission from his accountant or something like that. Mitt, it's your returns. You make the decision. And I think at one point he said, well, the 2011 return isn't done. That's fine. It's the third week of January. A lot of people don't have their taxes for last year done. You can always release the previous years, right? I mean, there must be sitting in a file somewhere. The idea that this is some, it's down in the warehouse where the Ark of the Covenant is stored, and I got to look through it. I don't understand what's so complicated about this. And the other thing is that when you become president of the United States, you have to disclose everything in terms of your finances. Usually it all goes into a blind trust. So all of this stuff is going to come out anyway. I just don't understand what the purpose of delay is. You get the suspicion that there's something in there that he doesn't want people to see, and there's a part of it's thinking like, well, if it's that he's rich, okay, we know that he's rich. We know that he's really, really rich. If it's the tax rate, well, he took the shot earlier this week. What is in there that's going to hurt him so bad, and it's just not clear, and it's a little unnerving. So I look, it's like tearing off a Band-Aid. My attitude is do it quick as you can and get the pain over with, so that you can move on to other things. I'll be happy to, but I don't know when I'm going to do it. No, you can't say both those things, Governor. What's going on in that head of yours?
Yeah, this magical idea that they all have to be released at the same time. I'm not sure what he thinks is going to be achieved by that, but it's not playing well. And other than that, the only other time the crowd got really angry was when Ron Paul got left out of the abortion question, and John King had to go back to him. But if Mitt Romney had a bad night, John King, who did a decent job of making sure people got to respond to different people's accusations, probably had the worst start of a debate moderator in the history of American politics, because he decided to ask a question that probably had to be asked given all the political buzz about it. And that's Newt Gingrich's ex-wife claiming that he requested an open marriage while he was having an affair with his now current wife. And Gingrich was having none of it. Here's a few different excerpts from that exchange.
The destructive, vicious, negative nature of much of the news media makes it harder to govern this country, harder to attract decent people to run for public office. And I am appalled that you would begin a presidential debate on a topic like that.
As you noted, Mr. Speaker, this story did not come from our network. As you also know, it is the subject of conversation in the campaign. I get your point. I take your point.
John, it was repeated by your network. You chose to start the debate with it. Don't try to blame somebody else.
That's what happens when you stick to the script, I think, Jim. John King just had that follow-up question. I don't know what he thought he was going to get in response. But after the initial answer from Newt Gingrich, I think he should have expected that to happen. And I think the fascinating part, though, was that Gingrich railed against John King for about 2 minutes and then bothered to get around to the fact that he claims the story is false. So that was an interesting ordering of priorities. But certainly the biggest moment of the debate seemed to come in the first couple minutes.
If I were in Newt Gingrich's shoes, and I hope to never really be in the shoes of that particular circumstance, I sympathize with his outrage and with his fury and with his indignation. On the other hand, I'm a little mystified that everyone is so shocked that John King asked the question. I mean, suppose that, Marianne Gingrich comes out and makes this allegation. Are we all supposed to avert our eyes? Is this something, out of bounds to ask Gingrich about? Because while he can be upset about the timing of it, that this would be the first topic King would choose to talk about, look, a big chunk of the discussion in what was, the biggest and busiest political day ever, a big chunk of it was, oh, my God, have you heard the news about, what Marianne Gingrich is saying about Newt Gingrich? And, Newt Gingrich can think that that's unfair. He can think that it's tawdry. He can think that it's the result of a bitter divorce and she's trying to get payback and revenge and make him pay for difficulties in the past. On the other hand, Americans want to like their presidents. I was thinking about this in terms of all kinds of marital issues. I wondered, you know, in the morning jolt, I discussed the question of what would happen if we had a president and a wife who openly stated they had a mutually consensual open marriage and that they had had dalliances and all that stuff. Would we be as upset about this without the wrong spouse? It's kind of an intellectual exercise, but I'm just putting this out there that, look, Americans want to like their president. They want to feel like he's a good man. Or if we have a woman, a good woman with a happy marriage and happy children, and everything's good about them. Everybody's families has challenges. Everybody's families have problems. But the idea that Newt is beside himself with surprise and fury that John King would have the audacity to ask that, welcome to the presidential race, Newt. I mean, I don't think you can really reasonably expect that the issue would not come up. And I'm mystified. I mean, like, you know, he's entitled to get angry at John King. I suppose John King should be very glad they didn't call him Juan. but it's starting to feel kind of a shtick with Gingrich that he, you know, you ask him a question he doesn't like and he beats the heck out of the moderator, and that's swell. Whether this this plays exceptionally well in a Republican primary. I keep hearing this argument that Newt will be a great debater if he wins the nomination, goes up against Barack Obama. And I just have this feeling that beating the heck out of mainstream media moderators is something that plays very well with a Republican base in a Republican primary, as it probably should. But I don't think necessarily wins votes in the larger public at large. And I think that there's part of me feels like if you don't like John King's, you know, questions, don't show up for the debate. You know, this is you walk through that door and you got to be ready for what comes at you. We will see how this plays in South Carolina. I know everybody enjoys media bashing, and you can probably argue that John King had it coming, but the idea that, you know, Marianne Gingrich can make a statement like this and it's completely out of bounds to ask Newt about it doesn't quite hold water with me.
Doesn't pass the smell test. And I have a feeling that if John King had asked that an hour and 45 minutes into the debate, he would have gotten the exact same answer with slightly mm-hmm. different wording. you wouldn't have mentioned the timing so much, but he still would have been just as outraged in his rhetoric, regardless of when it was asked in the debate. I think he just took further advantage of it because it happened to come first, which I think that probably did surprise a few people.
To his credit, John King did call him sir during the question. Because it's important to keep your decorum and dignity and respect in those circumstances.
Yes. When you're basically accusing someone of outlandish sexual behavior,
Speaker, are you just a big old freak, sir?
A lot of people think Gingrich won that exchange. If anybody else scored any points, there was probably Romney for just saying, let's get on to the real issues. So interesting way to start, and it certainly livened things up for the rest of the way. Jim, enjoy the results coming in tomorrow. Hopefully we'll actually have a winner, unlike the first state in this contest. But I think South Carolinians will probably actually pick a winner tomorrow.
Looking forward to one more chapter of this story being written, Greg.
Till Monday, Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.